Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. These podcasts are presented to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and our community. And we invite you to visit our website, JewishSacredAging.com, and the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. And we will as well invite your comments and suggestions to me, Rabbi Address, at JewishSacredAging.com. And we welcome to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, Dr. Jeff Cohn, cancer and serious illness life coach. Welcome, Dr. Cohn. Welcome to Seekers of Meaning. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
This is very interesting, and I really appreciate you coming here in studio and making the drive across the bridge here in Philadelphia area to southern New Jersey. Talk to me about what this is, cancer and serious illness life coach. What is it that you're doing?
So I've been trained as a life coach, which would enable me to coach anyone who's looking to close the gap in their life between where they are and where they want to be in something big and important. Most coaches wind up carving a niche for themselves. And I thought that I would primarily be focusing in healthcare, probably working with healthcare professionals. A few months ago, however, I realized that while I haven't practiced medicine in over 10 years, the one aspect that I miss is kind of the relationship piece and the helping piece. I didn't want to and don't want to do any doctoring, but the speaking to people dealing with serious illnesses, especially cancer, I was an oncologist when I was practicing, is still important to me. Since I've retired from practice, family members or friends periodically would call me up and ask me what I think of the recommendations they've gotten if they've been diagnosed with a cancer particularly. And I don't give them my recommendation, but I hear what they've been told and then walk them through what people that I consider to be experts have recommended and translate and help them make sense out of everything, respond to questions. And that's been a very valuable service for them. So that's part of what I'm offering to people who aren't my family members or friends that I'm working with.
So I'm fascinated. You are an oncologist. You are an oncologist. I guess you don't stop being an oncologist.
Correct.
Retired from practice. And what was the trigger? Did you have an aha moment on the expressway that says, this is what I have to do now? What was that trigger that motivated you to decide to be a coach?
Like many things that have had big impacts in my life, it was kind of serendipity that led to this decision. I had gone back and gotten a master's degree in 2005, and I was at the school for an alumni event, and they put together a program. And one of the things on the program was a panel discussion led by three physicians who had become coaches.
Really?
And when I heard them describe what had driven them, pulled them to that career decision, who they were working with, I just felt they're talking to me. In hindsight, I've lived my professional life and to a certain extent my personal life as an informal coach in a variety of different roles. So once I made this decision and started sharing it with people in my social network, they often would say, that's, you're going to be a natural at this. It's so aligned with just who you've always been.
I mean, that's really fascinating that, you know, it since from what I'm hearing, you said this is already all the time in you and just waiting for the opportunity for this thing. But physicians, the caring physicians really do a lot of coaching, I guess, informally, if that's the right word, and they're dealing with a patient in their practice, especially dealing with cancer. There's a lot of what is this, why, how. Am I going to be all right? Talk to me. I imagine you were doing this, as you were saying, informally within your practice. Am I correct on that?
Yes. And, you know, in the training for coaching, the differentiation is made between coaching and advising.
Okay.
And the temptation is strong to provide advice, be a helper, so to speak. And to a large extent, that's what physicians get paid to do. But as you suggested, a caring physician sometimes stops doing that to help the patient make a decision for themselves or jointly make the decision. The term shared decision making is used these days for a lot of the situations where there isn't a clear right or wrong way to go. So sometimes even to the slight discomfort of my patients, I would not make a decision for them and said, no, really, I need your input in this because there's different ways to go, and you know better than me in some ways what's best for you. So that's how I was being or acting like a coach while I was still being a treating physician.
And your website is caretochangecoaching.com. Is that correct?
Correct. I still think of it as kind of in beta mode. It's a work in progress, but it's got stuff about me and my coaching on there.
And your blog. And but if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, somebody wanted to make contact with you to start this coaching process, that's the best way to do it. Go to caretochangecoaching.com.
Yes, it's got my email and other helpful links on the site.
In the coaching, you know, we've had other life coaches on here before, and on basically around how to make your older adult years great and live the proper life and, you know, let go of the things that held you back and embrace it. But you're that niche, as you called it, dealing with serious illness, cancer. Are you anticipating or are you working? Is there a specific time that somebody signs up? Like, I'm going to sign up for 5 sessions, or is this something that just is ongoing until a resolution is reached?
I think there's different possible ways that the sessions will go, partly influenced by where the person is in their cancer journey, cancer experience when we start working together. In my mind, I've segmented out possible cancer clients into several different scenarios. Someone might be newly diagnosed with a favorable diagnosis. They might be newly diagnosed with a much more serious or advanced cancer diagnosis. They might be at the end of their treatment or just have had a recurrence, and all of those influence what the relationship would be like. If it is someone that is a newly diagnosed treatment or patient just getting ready to embark on treatment, I offer a relationship through the at least initial course of treatment, which is typically at least 3 months, sometimes as long as 6 months.
And you talk about serious illness, right? 'Cause cancer and serious illness life coaching. Give me an example. Are you including the serious illness as, are they both the same thing? Or if somebody's dealing, just for the sake of argument, with multiple sclerosis or Parkinson's disease, which is serious illness, it's not, may not be cancer, but how are you incorporating that? Or is it really the same type of modality?
Well, so yes, other illnesses like multiple sclerosis, heart failure, frailty of old age, really? Dementia, they're all together in the bucket of serious illness from the standpoint of people who write definitions about medical terms. And the way serious illness is characterized is it's an illness that could be life-limiting. It is causing some functional impairment that leads to you, the person with the illness, needing help in one or more aspects of their life. I guess those are the main characteristics of it. And I like to think of it particularly from the standpoint of a change in like the slope of the trajectory of an illness.
What do you mean?
Well, so somebody could have lung disease from smoking and live with it for many, many years, kind of in a stable relationship with their condition. Yeah, every now and then there's an episode, but most of the time it doesn't really do anything to seriously impair their quality of life. And then typically something changes. They start experiencing shortness of breath in a more chronic, ongoing fashion, or need to see their doctor more frequently, or show up in an emergency room multiple times, or start having other constitutional symptoms. They're fatigued or lose their appetite or something like that. And that's a sign that more similar problems are likely ahead. So my mom was diagnosed with a serious illness when I was in my residency, and she lived with it for 40 years. It was an autoimmune disease. And for the vast majority of that time, she wasn't particularly sick. But about 2 to 3 years before she died, something significantly changed, and you could feel like a downhill slope to her clinical course from that point on.
Again, we're speaking with Dr. Jeff Cohn, cancer and serious illness life coach. The website caretochangecoaching.com is how to reach Dr. Cohn if you wanted to touch base with him and avail yourself of his coaching services. This is a technology question, just occurred to me. I mean, we're doing this outside of, you know, in the Philadelphia area, but cancer is not limited to any geography. Are you anticipating doing any of this? And what's your feeling about doing this long distance via Zoom or Skype? I mean, I know there are therapists who do this. I mean, do you see yourself evolving into this? Somebody perhaps in Minneapolis who hears about this wants to avail themselves of your services and can only do this on, you know, by electronic means. Is that something you consider?
Not only consider, that's my norm. In fact, someone that I started working with a couple of weeks ago is a family member of a person with cancer. And that's part of what I'm doing too, is if it's the family member rather than the patient themselves, I'm fine working with the caregiver as well. So this person has temporarily moved from their Philadelphia area home to be a family caregiver of their father in India, and I did my first session with her.
It is long distance.
Yeah, via Zoom, and can't get much more distant than that.
Yeah, and I think that's important to also understand that this is, as you know, and this is a family systems issue. And the fact that you're working with caregivers and open to working with the caregivers, because the stress and strain on that is overwhelming sometimes, and is extremely stressful, and impacts, imagine the person dealing with the cancer themselves. I'm sure you've dealt with that in your practice as well.
Yes, and I think a lot of the strain is a result of conversations that need to happen and too often don't. And so that's part of what my coaching, I think, helps support, is the conversations that when they take place about what's important to me and what I'm feeling and, you know, how we feel about each other, that when they take place, if and when the person with the serious illness is no longer here, it's much easier for the caregivers to keep going.
Speaking of conversations, I'm involved with a national organization called CTAC, which is called the Coalition to Transform Advanced Care. I just came back recently from their annual meeting. The conversations issue, and do you, in your, I'm sure you had some of this when you were in practice, but now in the coaching, do you enter into this area of encouraging families who may not have made care plans or advanced care plans or end of life wishes plans? Do you encourage them to, if they haven't, to make sure that they have these conversations?
First of all, CTAC's a tremendous organization, and I think they're doing great work. So I'm doing my best not to provide advice. Fortunately, the organizations that I like walk people with cancer or their families through their recommendations, they recommend having these conversations. And what I've heard myself say to the first few family members that I've worked with in the situations that I've started coaching them, their family member is just starting treatment. And so the family members have said, well, we're trying to be as supportive as we can be and encourage a lot of optimism and hope. Because my father seems like he's a little depressed and I just want him to fight against this. So I said, it's totally appropriate for someone just embarking on treatment to be hopeful and optimistic. And I think of that as one side of a two-sided coin. The flip side, which is equally important, is fears along with those hopes. And too often we don't talk about what we're fearing. And that I recommended to these family members. I recommend you try and talk with your family member about their fears too. It's one of those situations where hope for the best, but be prepared for what might not be the best that might be coming your way too. So that seemed to land quite well. I think that will be part of my norm for that situation.
Is there a significant mental health component to what you're doing? You alluded to just before, you know, people may be depressed initially or in the course of a treatment or in the course of the caregiving continuum with a family member. Is there a significant mental health component that you would deal with in your coaching for both the patient and the family?
I would say I probably won't be dealing with the mental health aspects very much, but to maybe normalize some of it. In one of my recent conversations where the family member was talking about their dad who had just been diagnosed with advanced lung cancer being depressed, mm-hmm. They were talking about taking him to a psychiatrist or a therapist. And I just said, you know, that may be important and helpful for him. And there's a thing that we refer to as situational depression. And, you know, there's probably a good reason for him to be sad right now. And so just like acknowledging that and giving him permission to be sad and not try to necessarily talk him out of being sad, that might actually be a way of being supportive to him.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point about the giving permission, because it's in dealing with, you know, serious illness, cancer, the treatments, sometimes, as you know, it's a long haul and there are peaks and valleys. I mean, working with individuals from the clergy perspective. So the idea of giving the family and the individual permission to feel what they're feeling and not saying, well, I shouldn't be feeling this or that. I imagine that in some ways can be liberating and say, this is perfectly okay. Which leads me to a question. There's this phrase I keep running into every time we do a session on any of this stuff and as part of Jewish Sacred Aging. And that is learning to live with, quote, the new normal, unquote. How, in your experience, both clinically and in your coaching, how have you seen people really adjusting to, I'm living with cancer. I'm dealing with my chemotherapy, but I have X, Y, and Z things to do. It's the new normal. Can you just reflect upon that, how your experience and have seen people dealing with that? And do you mind the phrase?
I don't mind the phrase at all. I think it describes what people are going through pretty well. And I've been constantly amazed, going back to when I was in practice, with just the resilience that most people seem to have. Like when something awful happens in their life, most of the time it seems like, all right, now from this point on, this is the new normal. And so what does a good day look like? What does feeling well look like? You know, I need to adapt it to the expectations that I have now going forward, rather than always reflecting back to how I used to feel. It seems like a much more productive way of being. One woman who was one of my favorite patients ever taught me so many lessons around this. She had an advanced breast cancer affecting many different parts of her body, including most of the bones in her body. And she had a young daughter. And one Monday morning, she came in to see me and she just looked awful. And I said, what's going on? She said, I took my daughter on a hayride this weekend. It was this time of year. And she had sat on hay bales with this 5-year-old daughter bouncing around in the fields. And she said, I feel like Humpty Dumpty. I said, you know, you don't really have to put yourself through that. She said, no, but I do, because it's life and I'm living it. And so she knew that there were going to be consequences, but she was going to, you know, make the best out of what this new normal was going to be for as long as she could.
It's always amazing, and every clergy person has dealt with individuals like that who will sit in their office and they'll talk about these. I've had this die. I'm living with this, but I can't let it define me because I have too much life to live. And it's always energizing and in many ways, as awe-inspiring to, because then you, the next moment you may get somebody who's in a similar situation who said, who will say, my life is over and there's nothing I can do. And just, it's just a fascinating, and I'm sure in your coaching, you will continue to bump into both scenarios.
Yeah. And I'm using this tagline for my serious illness, particularly cancer coaching, helping you thrive through cancer. Hmm. So, and I mean that wherever the person is on their cancer journey, you know, even if someone is very close to end of life, I think there are certain ways of being, living, that can at least in some way align with the concept of thriving.
Is attitude great? I mean, I've seen articles now basically saying that how you feel, the attitude of how I approach this illness, can go a long way in how you respond to treatment.
I'm not so sure about the response to treatment. I'm much sure about just how life feels from day to day, you know, the ability to thrive, to enjoy life. There was a local speaker that I didn't get to hear recently, but an article in the Philadelphia Inquirer about her and a new book. She was a palliative care doc. And,
oh, yeah, right.
And she was just talking about the challenges that the military or fighting metaphor has created for people who are getting sicker, dealing with serious illness, that, you know, this idea that I got to keep fighting, and it's like an either or, either I win or I lose, that makes life more challenging in that situation for many people than it need be. I'm aligned with that, you know, it kind of is what it is, and the living each day one day at a time, and if it's a crappy day, try and put it behind you, and hopefully the next day will be, and you know, try and find things that are possible that you're able to do that bring you meaning and joy. That's what thriving can be.
Is there any time just to say enough?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. And that's an individual decision too. I remember one of the most heartbreaking families that I was interacting with was the wife and kids of a marathon runner who got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in his 40s. And he was very much end stage, and we were just, quote unquote, just focusing on his comfort. And with a marathoner's heart, his body just kept going, even though we weren't doing anything to prolong things. And the wife said, isn't there something that you can do to make this stop? You know, there's no meaning in any of this anymore. I didn't have a good answer for her.
That sort of like opens up one question I have to ask you as a rabbi. In your coaching and your practice, what have you found the role of spirituality to be? Or faith, however you want to call it.
Yeah, I think it's very important for many people. And I think the people who've got a strong sense of spirituality, whether it be tied to formal religion or just other belief systems, it seems like it supports them and brings them comfort, and maybe even allows them to live longer.
Are you optimistic, before we end, are you optimistic about cancer treatment?
I know we're making significant strides. There are people who have diseases that when I was practicing were death sentences in weeks or months that now have the possibility of living many months or even longer. I think Jimmy Carter is the best example of that. And yet, most people with diseases like Jimmy Carter's or that advanced don't have responses to treatment like his has been. So we've got still a ways to go. I think the targeted approach, finding the gene or genes that are awry and trying to counteract them will be effective for some, but not enough. And other paradigms are needed too.
So the quote battle unquote goes on.
For sure.
Yes. Dr. Jeff Cohn, cancer and serious illness life coach. The website, if you want to contact the doctor to perhaps discuss your particular individual situation and talk to him about becoming a coach with him or working with him, the website is caretochangecoaching, just one word, caretochangecoaching.com. Correct? Just one?
Right. All one word and all letters, not the number two. Care.
Right. T-O.
T-O. Care. Yeah.
Right. Dr. Cohn, thank you very much. Good luck with this. This is an amazing enterprise that you're embarking on. And you certainly, from your entire practice of oncology, know the language and also know the journey, which I think is really, really important. That you know what people are experiencing, you know what the family members are feeling. So just good luck. And this is a great mitzvah. So I wish you just continued success and stay healthy. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. And again, we welcome your comments and suggestions to me, Rabbi Address at JewishSacredAging.com. And we continue to invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. We appreciate your continued support of our work. And again, if you'd like to make a tax-exempt donation to help further the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and the Seekers of Meaning podcast, please go to our website, JewishSacredAging.com, and click on the donate icon at the top of the page. Your support is greatly appreciated. Seekers of Meaning is recorded at the studios of Lubetkin Media Companies here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and we thank our producer, Steve Lubetkin. Again, thank you for listening. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address, and I look forward to greeting you on our next edition of Seekers of Meaning. Shalom.